Good day, and welcome to the National Association of Manufacturers Accountability Project. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask a question during the question-and-answer session. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Michael Short.
Good afternoon, and thank you to everyone for being on the call today. Later this afternoon, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is going to announce that the city is filing a deeply misguided lawsuit against energy manufacturers as well as financially costly city pension fund divestment plans. On the call to discuss this upcoming announcement and the critical issues it raises, I have Linda Kelly, Senior Vice President and General Counsel of the National Association of Manufacturers, who also heads up the association's Manufacturers Accountability Project. She'll be discussing the lawsuit and the misguided legal strategy behind it. Also on the call is Chris Netram, the NAM's Vice President for Tax and Domestic Economic Policy, who will address the divestment plan. With that, I'll turn the call over to Linda.
Great. Thank you, Michael, and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining the call today. As Michael said, I'm Linda Kelly, and I'm the General Counsel here at the National Association of Manufacturers. Here at the NAM, we've been tracking an increasingly concerning trend involving a coordinated network of special interests that are targeting manufacturers in the courts with misguided and politically motivated legal attacks. We're now seeing this play out in New York City today. In response to this trend, we launched the Manufacturers Accountability Project. The MAP project is intended to set the record straight and highlight the concerted and coordinated campaign that is behind these lawsuits, which is being waged by trial lawyers, public officials, deep-pocketed foundations, and other activists who are seeking to undermine and weaken manufacturers in the U.S. There is a particular focus most recently on energy manufacturers. I'd encourage you to learn more about this Manufacturers Accountability Project to visit the website, which is at mfgaccountabilityproject.org. So in many cases, trial lawyers and other legal authorities, such as the New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, have been working hand-in-hand with activists, wealthy donors, and other public officials to attack and disparage private companies and manufacturers. We're seeing this today with New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and his lawsuit targeting energy manufacturers. He is just the latest mayor in a line of others who have higher political ambitions and are pulling a page from the Eric Schneiderman playbook and leading the city into misguided litigation targeting America's energy manufacturers. The hypocrisy of this lawsuit is stunning when you consider New York City's overwhelming reliance on fossil fuel sources to power the city. And we've also seen many of the players in this case in the activist playbook that is guiding these lawsuits throughout the country. One that I would highlight who is involved in the lawsuit today is Matt Pawa. Pawa is one of the lead attorneys in the lawsuit, is supporting the city in bringing the suit, and has been among the key ringleaders in the coordinated campaign that I referenced. He's a Boston-based attorney. He has spent years testing new legal theories of liability against corporate America before most recently taking on the energy industry. He's built a career out of seeking lawsuits against energy manufacturers while attempting to saddle the industry with exorbitant legal fees and really abusing the legal system along the way. I would add that it would be very interesting to know what his financial arrangement is with the city. Normally, these types of legal engagements are contingency fee arrangements, and there's anywhere from 20 to 30% of the payout that is contractually going back to the private plaintiff attorney. So it'll be very interesting to get more information about what that arrangement is. But furthermore, there's no legal basis to support these lawsuits, which are really politicized. The plaintiffs don't have standing in most cases, and the basis for this lawsuit, public nuisance, has been tried and failed in the courts before. A recent attempt earlier in the 2000s went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court rejected it by an 8-0 vote. So it's very likely that this lawsuit will fail as well. So, in short, it's a fundamental waste of the court's time and the taxpayers' resources. And fundamentally, the issue of climate change is not an appropriate one for the courts to be deciding, which courts have reinforced again and again. I would also bring your attention to a recent string of similar climate litigation in California. There are seven cities and counties there that have brought similar claims against energy manufacturers. And earlier this week, ExxonMobil brought a countersuit against those folks for basically including contradictory information in their legal complaints and their bond offerings about what the true challenges of climate change are in their municipalities. The municipalities failed to disclose in municipal bond prospectuses the same climate-related risks that they're claiming in their lawsuits against the energy manufacturers. They've taken the energy manufacturers to court, blaming them for harms related to climate change and catastrophes they allege are coming their way. But when it was time to secure money from investors, the same cities failed to mention these certain risks that they cite in their lawsuits. Unsurprisingly, familiar names are behind those California lawsuits, including Matt Paua in several of them. And in several of the municipalities, the same officials have signed off on the contradictory statements in the legal filings and the bonds. I would raise the question of whether New York City has similarly sent misleading or contradictory information in their bond offerings with the allegations that are included in the lawsuit today. So with that, I'm going to thank you for joining the call today, and I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Chris Natrum, to talk about the divestment issue.
Great. Thank you, Linda. As Linda mentioned, I'm Chris Natrum, the Vice President of Tax and Domestic Economic Policy here at the National Association of Manufacturers, and I wanted to touch today on the mayor's push to divest the city's various pension funds from fossil fuel companies. this call, the call for divestment, follows the same failed playbook that we've seen in other states. It's never worked at any level, at the city, county, or state level. And in fact, the same activists continually push this in other jurisdictions like Bill McKibben without success. Instead of focusing on politics here, Mayor de Blasio should be focusing on his fiduciary duties to the public employees of New York. New York City needs to improve the financial conditions of its pension plans, and the mayor needs to stop playing politics with the retirement funds of police officers, firefighters, and teachers. I mean, let's be clear what's going on with these pension plans right now. This would be a bad policy even if the funds, if the pension plans were fully funded, but they're nowhere close to that. Based on their most recent annual financial reports, the funded status for the various pension plans here ranges from between 57% to less than 70%. And again, we're talking about pensions for New York City firefighters, New York City police officers, and New York City teachers. We should not be playing politics with the financial security of these folks. Second, divestment is going to be hugely costly for New York City and for the retirees. At least in the state level, in Suffolk County, the Suffolk County's Association of Municipal Employees commissioned a report that found that the state level common retirement fund would lose $2.8 billion over 20 years if it pursued divestment. That's $2.8 billion over 20 years. This would clearly, pursuing this plan that could put billions of dollars at risk, would clearly affect the financial security of firefighters, teachers, and police officers. Fortunately, at the state level, the state comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, has consistently rejected divestment and opted to stay engaged with energy companies instead. The mayor should take a page from DiNapoli's playbook. In fact, in a recent report, the American Council for Capital Foundation found that an investing philosophy that prioritizes politics over returns was partially responsible for a $142 billion swing in the California Public Employees Retirement System's funded status. It went from a surplus of $2.9 billion 10 years ago to a deficit of $139 billion today. So these policies clearly do not work. And finally, I just want to note that oil and gas represents a key part of the manufacturing economy, and manufacturers as a whole provide jobs for 12.5 million Americans and pay an average wage of more than $82,000 per year. The reality of this proposal is that divestment won't do anything to cut greenhouse gas emissions. All it does is result in a passage of stocks from one shareholder to the other, and it will not result in the mayor achieving what his stated goal seems to be. That's all I've got, Michael.
All right, operator, with that, I think we'll open it up for a couple questions.
And at this time, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone to ask a question. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Any follow-up question you may have, you will need to press the star and one to get back in the queue. And once again, that's star and one to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment. And we'll take our first question from Adam Aton with ENE News. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Thanks for doing this. My question is for Linda, and I was hoping you could maybe just talk a little bit more about the legal basis that you say, you say there's not a legal basis for this, and talk a little bit more about what was that Supreme Court case that you mentioned? Maybe just give us a little bit more detail on what you see as you know, the reasons why this won't go anywhere.
Absolutely. So this case is based on the legal theory of public nuisance, and what the plaintiffs are claiming is that by producing fossil fuels, the defendants have created a public nuisance by contributing to climate change and threatening the infrastructure of New York City. The same basis for liability was tried in the case of AEP versus Connecticut. And that was another lawsuit that New York City was involved in, along with Connecticut and a few other states and municipalities. And it was a different target at that time. It was actually the power generators who were the defendants. But the claim for liability was very similar and also based on public nuisance. And that case went, as I said, all the way up to the Supreme Court. And it was the theory was rejected 8-0 by the Supreme Court, and the opinion was authored by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So it's kind of astonishing that they're trying the same theory of liability in federal court in New York.
All right, we'll take the next question.
And once again, that's star and one to ask a question. And that is star and one to ask a question or a follow-up question. And there are no questions at this time.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, I'll go ahead and, okay, Amy Harder, I think, has a question. Let's go ahead and call on her.
And your line is open, Amy.
Hi. Thanks, guys. I dialed in late, so I missed pretty much the whole beginning, so I apologize if this is repetitive for you. But can you just kind of go through the various lawsuits that have been filed alleging the same thing? Are they using the same basic legal theory that Linda just laid out?
You mean, Amy, this is Linda, you mean the ones that are currently pending or the previously filed ones?
The New York one today, but then also previously filed.
So the New York one is based on public nuisance, the AEP versus Connecticut case was based on public nuisance. There was another case, Comer versus Murphy Oil, filed in the Fifth Circuit, also based on a theory of public nuisance. Another case, Kivalina versus Exxon, based on public nuisance. The California lawsuit, sorry, it was a little bit confusing in how I referenced which lawsuits you were asking about, but those are all cases that have been decided. There are seven pending lawsuits in the state of California that have been brought by counties and cities. Those are all also based on public nuisance, but the California cases are based on state law, so that they're a little different in that respect. One thing that is common to all of those cases is the plaintiff's lawyer, Matt Powa. Well, not all of them, most of them. There are a few that have in California that have been brought by other plaintiff's firms.
Okay, operator, any more questions?
And once again, that's star and one to ask a question. And we have a question from Valerie Richardson with the Washington Times. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for holding this. I wanted to ask you, obviously you're seeing the attorneys in the California cases in New York and with the attorneys general a couple of years ago all comparing the fossil fuel industry to the tobacco industry. That seems to be one of their lines of argument. I'm just wondering if you could address that.
Well, I would address the kind of big hole in the theory of liability here, and it really struck me when I think about New York City and the amount of power consumed in that city. If you read through the lawsuit, which I did this morning, you will see that it's all based on liability, you know, alleging liability resulting from the production of fossil fuels. But, you know, what's the big missing piece there between the production of fossil fuels and the climate impact? That's who's burning it. So there's such a focus on the production of fossil fuels, but New York City, you know, relies on the burning of a whole heck of a lot of it. So that, to me, you know, makes it pretty hypocritical and is, I think, a fairly large hole in their liability theory.
And once again,
all right, I think we got time for one more question.
If you do have a question or a follow-up question, please press the star and one on your phone. And we have a question from Amy Harder, a follow-up. Your line is open.
Hello again. So, you know, putting aside the details of the legal theory, I mean, even if these cases, as they have in the past, have not been successful, I mean, how are you responding to sort of the debate in the public realm? I mean, you know, I would say that part of the effort is regardless of the legal fight, is to sort of to push these storylines through the media and other places. I mean, how are you responding to that side of this debate?
So that is, you know, exactly why we founded the Manufacturers Accountability Project, Amy, and I did talk about that a little bit at the top of the call. This is an effort that we have launched recently that's really seeking to educate the media, the legal community, the public about the coordinated effort that is behind all of these legal attacks. And you know, I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to visit the website mfgaccountabilityproject.org. Sorry, it's a bit of a mouthful. And it really lays out, you know, a lot of who the players are and the connections between the law, who's supporting the lawsuits.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Cool.
All right, so I think that's all the time we have for the call for today. If we didn't get to you, or if you have any additional questions, you can reach the Manufacturers Accountability Project at info@mfgaccountabilityproject.org.
That's info@mfgaccountabilityproject.org. I'd also encourage you to check out the website that Linda just referenced for more information on what we're doing at the MAP project. With that, I just want to wish you all a great rest of your week, and thanks for joining the call. Thanks.